And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies, even though it might not be the best of circumstances. But to help me get through it all, because we might be sad, we do have Carlos here, who might or might not have a prop. But I guess we have both unintentionally worn black because we're in mourning of the Rowdies season. Is that your reasoning, Carlos?
I guess so. I mean, it was more just because I was, you can't even really tell from how the camera is, but I'm wearing the little Ralph's Mob shirt from a couple of years ago. Little Bay Area Unity.
There we go.
813-727-941. One of my favorite Ralph's Mob shirts, by the way. This just like needs to be more like Tampa Bay, like just Tampa Bay gear. You know what I mean? Like Tampa gear, Tampa Bay gear. Like this air, this is something that like some like hip South Tampa designer should have come up with and like sold for like $1 million on like, I don't know, some like South Tampa boutique, but I'm glad Ralph's Mob came up with it and sold it for $20 instead. So, it's more like gray, I guess, but I think we're going with the same idea for sure. I was telling Eureka before we started recording, James, that these are kind of the most awkward episodes to record. When you get to the end of the season, in a perfect world, it's not the end of the season yet, but in our very real Rowdy's world, we took a unfortunate loss that we'll talk about in a little bit. But there's nothing really to like point to next week, right? There's no, okay, well, now that we finished the first half of the episode, let's talk about the game we have coming up next week.
Right.
There usually is always next week. But that's how sports work. I mean, eventually they come to an end, and in this case, there is no next week. So, folks, get ready for what always feels like a really long off season, no matter how the season ends. I wouldn't know, you know, how it feels to end the season on a championship, because I was a wee baby when the 2012 title came around. But I'm sure that feels a bit shorter, to be fair. But in most cases, the off season feels quite long, and that's where we're at. James, lots of stuff we can talk about during this off season. There's so much to look ahead to towards next year. Who knows what this team will look like several months from now. But we can get into all of that over the next several months. We have a lot of time to do that, and we're strapped. We're very tight for off-season content, I'm sure. So we'll spread this out quite nicely, I'm sure. Until then, we can talk about this more recent result, reflect a little bit on this game, and maybe a little bit more on the season as a whole. But before we do any of that, James, how's it going in your neck of the woods back home and sunny Tampa? Well, you're not in Tampa, right?
I'm in Bradenton. I'm in the 941 section of the
941 part. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going okay. Supposedly there is another potential hurricane brewing south of us. So
what the hell?
Yeah, don't know how that's happening. And we're recording now on November 12th, so it's well past time that this should be in the past. But yeah, it's other than that, I would say it's not too bad.
It's the Charleston Battery weather machine. They control the weather. You know, this is evil, evil organization.
I haven't heard that put out on the internet yet, and it's about time somebody said it.
Look, if I die tomorrow, just know it wasn't an accident. All right. Like, if I die tomorrow, you know who it was.
It was Lee Nick Cohen.
it was Lee Cohen or Nick Markanek who came to my apartment and silenced me for speaking up. No, I'm sure the Charleston Battery does not have a weather machine, just to be clear. And there's no, like, I don't know, conspiracy theorist that hears that and it's like, actually, you know what? Carlos is right. I'm going to spread this rumor. Although that would be a fun one to spread. I'm not going to lie. Maybe we run with that propaganda, James. Let's just create this conspiracy. Okay.
Supposedly it would be one of the ones that gained the least traction, or I would assume. I mean, who's to say? Who's to say?
There's been some wild conspiracy theories that have gained traction in this world, James. I think the one thing I've come to learn is that there's no conspiracy to out there for someone to not believe.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? I waffled that. James, let's stop talking about the Charleston Battery weather machine. I'm going to start waffling. Take us back into this.
All right. Well, this past weekend, the Rowdies lost 2-1 to Charleston away in South Carolina. As I'm sure most of our listeners know, as I'm sure most of our viewers know, it was a very unfortunate weekend, and it was not the way that anybody on this part of the this part of that match, I guess, wanted it to end. But that is the way that sports go sometimes. And unfortunately, we cannot all influence the game the way that we would want. I imagine that there would probably be more people in the world supporting the Rowdies and the Charleston Battery, but who can even say? Either way, they have come out the victorious team in this particular case. In our own standings, Carlos and I each have 15 points, while Eureka has 12. So Eureka is ultimately the lowest points gatherer in
relegated.
That means that we jokingly decided on a punishment of jumping into the bay. I don't know if we're going to I don't know if we're not doing something like if we're going to end up doing something like this. But we do have to come up with something for Eureka to do.
It has to be something.
Yeah. Carlos and I will need a tiebreaker. I'm going to propose that we make a bet just picking one team or the other who comes out in the championship final. And then maybe that'll be our tiebreaker there to see who actually wins it. And if we get some suggestions for who wins, what they ultimately get by doing so, maybe that will help us out too. So if you are listening or watching or whatever on any social medias, give us some suggestions. Some of them more serious, maybe buying a six pack. Some of them less serious, maybe jumping into the bay, as we've said. But yeah, let's get some suggestions on that.
We need some suggestions for Eureka's last place. My favorite is always doing the hot wings challenge at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Eureka.
I know you're listening to this, and I think we just need to brainstorm a bit here. I feel like it's something that we should have decided on earlier in the year, but.
Well, the other way that we could look at it is this is the perfect way to get some social media engagement is if we start a poll online. Maybe that's what we need.
We'll brainstorm here. Anyway, hot wings challenge. I don't know. Eureka has to. I don't know. I'm terrible. I'm not creative right now, James. I'm so tired. If you're listening to this, drop some ideas. Let's see what we can get.
Let's get some.
And wait, James, how do we decide who comes out in first place? Should we play like FIFA or something?
Well, I was saying you and I could pick between the USL Championship final game. Because I am not good at FIFA, so I would not do well there. You would get an automatic W there. But we'll see if anybody has further suggestions, and we'll try and get something along the lines to give us a tiebreaker.
We'll
work on all of that, and we'll get some brainstorming, hopefully with some help of all of you good viewers and listeners who are tuning in, and that'll get us going there. Now, back at RBLR HQ, which is in multiple places, of course, we'll start our postseason review this week, not only by reviewing this past game, but we will do a little bit of the breakdown of how we're just feeling going into this offseason. And then next week, we'll probably start doing player grades and all of that kind of stuff, because that's usually how we do our postseason. And I think that it's a relatively good formula. If you do have suggestions, though, we're always open to those as well. Let us know what you have. If you want to get at us in any form or forum for any reason, give us suggestions, tell us to go away. We probably won't follow that one, but there are all sorts of options out there. Please like and subscribe to us on YouTube or any major podcast platform. And of course, follow us on all the social medias at RBLR Sports. You can do that literally wherever you are on social media. We are also on Blue Sky recently. I have been told by Eureka that we took off there. So if you're on Blue Sky, get involved. We'll see you at that particular platform. Carlos, let's do the quick recap before we get into the actual questions in relation to this game.
Absolutely. Your starting lineup was nothing too surprising. Jordan Farr started in net. Jordan Doherty was on the back line with Freddie Kleeman and Aaron Guillen. In front of them, you had Nick Moon at that left wing back spot. Lewis Hilton, Chrysostomo in between him and Bodley out at that right wing back spot. Bodley on the left wing back spot. Nick Moon on the right wing back spot. And in front of them, Cal Jennings, Manu Arteaga, and of course, Leo Fernandez getting another start to end the year in that sort of, I don't know, center forward, attacking mid kind of role he has when he's kind of free roaming in the middle. Nothing particularly surprising here. I know Nyang Ibiri had a bit of a knock. So even if, you know, we might have expected him to get a start, which I don't not wasn't really sure I did. Yeah, Nick Moon got the start in that one. So again, nothing too particularly out there or crazy. This was a good lineup. It's kind of what I expected, what I wanted. And they came out pretty strong. The Rowdies took the lead early on with a Manu Arteaga goal, assisted by none other than Kyle Jennings, that dynamic duo up top, doing just a little bit more to close out the year to get that last goal that we would score on the season. Unfortunately, as you can tell by the way I set that up, Charleston Battery would get back into it rather quickly after the second half. In the 50th minute, Nick Markanic put the ball away with a header, I believe, right? Yeah, it was a header. Mm-hmm. The 50th minute, they go up. Sorry, they tie the game 1-1 very early on in the second half. And it wouldn't be until the 83rd minute that tie is broken with none other than an Aaron Molloy free kick that you can only sit back and watch.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching this. So, for context, I was leaving the Washington Spirit playoff game because it went to overtime. And I was watching the game on my phone when I was leaving. That Arteaga goal happened while I was walking out of the concourse from the Spirit game. And I probably looked like a psycho because I was going crazy, like smacking the wall and everything with the Arteaga goal. The fun bit is that I think a lot more people learned about the Rowdies that day because I started showing everybody my phone. But as I got home and settled in, Markanic gets the equalizer. Later on, I'm sitting on the couch, stressed as hell. But genuinely, I couldn't even be mad at the Aaron Molloy goal.
Yeah.
It was a wonder goal. Truly, truly a beautiful free kick. I know Jordan Farr has gotten some flack this season for some mistakes he's made. I think he had a fantastic game in Detroit. I think he closed out the season really well. And I think he had a great game in this one too, actually. I don't think like the FOP Mob rating does him justice for the game he had in this one. FOP Mob gave him a 6.9. I genuinely think it should have been higher. The amount of pressure Charleston put on and put on us in that first half that we held out was something special. And Jordan Farr was a part of that. I'm not going to blame him for that free kick.
No, certainly not.
Yeah. So long story short, in the quick recap here, Rowdies lose 2-1 in Charleston in a game that we absolutely had a chance to win. I think we just took our foot off the gas maybe a little bit too early, and Charleston scratched and clawed their way back into it, and they needed a wonder goal to take the lead. This Rowdy squad, despite where they were on the table, was certainly not below this Charleston team, and I think it's quite unfortunate. There's many other worlds where this game goes very, very differently if a couple of those chances that we can talk about in a little bit go our way. So look, if there's a way to end the year, like, this is the way I'd want it to be. We had a lot not going our way for us this season towards the end of the year, or we might have expected to come into a game like Charleston and even get blown out the way we did when we went there earlier this year. Granted, 3-1's on a blowout, but that Freddie Kleeman goal was like garbage time goal. So in my head, it's a 3-0 loss last time we were in Charleston. This was a good way to end the year. You never want to end with a loss, but if you want to lose, they showed some heart, and there's nothing else I can really ask. But we'll break this down a bit more here in just a minute. To go around the league, some other results, some really good games around the league, honestly. In all, would I go as far as to say they were all surprises? Not really. I guess Colorado Springs beating OCSC 2-1 was nothing too crazy. Colorado Springs, again, one of, I think, the stories of the year. I take it back. There's so many stories just in these few games. Like Colorado Springs. So hold on. We'll mention this in a second. Colorado Springs wins 2-1 after extra time against Orange County. Colorado Springs, an incredible revival after a dismal start to the year.
Yeah.
Dismal. Remember earlier this year? Like, they were horrendous. Horrendous. No one gave them a shot to even be in the playoffs. They're in the conference final out west, and deservedly so, because they closed out incredibly, incredibly well. Shout out my boy Aiden Rocha, again, Colorado Springs player. He's killing it over there. Lou City lost at home 3-0, James, to Rhode Island FC in their first season. Rhode Island was the only team to beat Louisville in Louisville this season?
That's a good question. I don't know offhand.
I'm 95% sure they were the only team to beat Louisville at home this season during the regular season. And obviously they did it again in the playoffs. So I just fact checked myself and I think I'm right. Yeah. Yeah. Rhode Island FC was the only team to beat Louisville at home this year in the regular season. And that was that crazy game. Think way back to June of this year, James. In June, Louisville City lost 5-2 at home to Rhode Island FC. Do you remember that one? That was a crazy.
Not offhand, but I'm surprised it doesn't, because that's pretty wild just to hear again.
that was the story of that weekend across the league. It's Rhode Island goes into Louisville, wins 5-2 in a thrilling game. The only team to beat Louisville at home throughout the regular season. Louisville seemingly just had a really weird off week. They got back into it and they have the monstrous season they had for the rest of the year. Of course, Rhode Island goes in there this time around. Louisville City's recouped. They know what they're in for. They know not to take this team lightly anymore. And surely you think they're going to go in there and wipe the floor with this Rhode Island team. But Rhode Island, again, having an incredible close to the season, did it again. 3-0 in Louisville. Just another insane story in Rhode Island and a crazy game here. By the way, JJ Williams, former Rowdy, of course, got 2 goals in this one. Mm-hmm. I love to see the former Rowdy succeed, but it hurts when they make it further than you, you know. Something to chew on, I guess. And then the last game in the playoffs, James, so before you can cut me off and I can stop waffling here. This was the other, I think, story of the weekend, was Las Vegas Lights beating New Mexico United 1-0 away in New Mexico. New Mexico, the top-seeded team out west, of course, Las Vegas, getting that fourth seed in the Western Conference. Again, another team that kind of had a great close to the year, a team that was incredibly unserious for the last several seasons. It's incredible what happens when you have a mildly serious like sports ownership group.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can be competitive, especially out west where, like, frankly, I think the competition is a bit lighter. Just the last couple seasons it's been that way. And I think it's continued to trend that way this season. One decent ownership group out west and Las Vegas is in the conference final.
Also, I'd like to point out on that one, Reiko Rosarena, another former Rowdy, man of the match in that 1-0 win.
Yeah, exactly. That was my other note. Absolutely. I still have notifications for him when he was on loan to Ford Madison. I was keeping up with him, seeing how he was doing. And I always forget to turn off player notifications. So I still get notifications for like Timmy Mell. You remember him?
Yeah. Yeah.
When he was on loan in the, oh my goodness. To who? Chattanooga Red Wolves. I think that's where he was.
Maybe.
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. He was in
Is Chattanooga. He still in the USL?
Couldn't tell you. I have no clue. I haven't gotten notifications in a while from him, but I remember randomly. Anyway, long story short, Reiko Rosarena, man of the match in this one, another former Rowdy, like you said. He has seemed to really, really find his footing with this Las Vegas team. He's had a great season. It's incredible what a change of scenery can do.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy who I think obviously could never get a ton of playing time with the Rowdies, given the variety of incredible goalkeepers we've had. And when he did, you know, he had the infamously memorable end to the year, right, against Orange County in the final. Again, I can't even really blame him for that, how that game went, but he was in a situation where it looked like he just kind of needed a change of scenery and it worked. This guy's a monster. He's a really, really good goalie. I think it's showing in Las Vegas. I wanted to spend a little bit on those because those were really interesting results across the league. All three of those games were really, really fascinating results. And the end of the year is going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
Like Charleston, I think right now is certainly the clear favorite, like by a good bit. But this Rhode Island team is just in such good form. Like you can't count them out right now. Right. And then out west, Colorado Springs in incredible form themselves. You can't really count them out either. I know Charleston would host in a final between Colorado and Charleston, but keep an eye on a Colorado team that if they get a final against a Rhode Island or something like that, they're playing at home, they're in business. This Colorado team could be the story of maybe like the year in U.S. soccer if they close out the year with the title. But anyway, long-winded way of saying keep watching the USL. I know the Rowdies are out, but these are games that are, if nothing else, incredibly fascinating. Going to be really, really good games. And of course the USL can always use the viewership numbers. So keep being a good lower division soccer ally. Okay. James, I'm sorry I had to waffle about that for a little bit. You have anything to add on these games? Because I think it's worth just kind of munching on a little bit here. If you have anything else to add on the other playoff results.
No, you covered the big stuff that I would have wanted to hit. I think Colorado Springs, you have been banging on that drum for most of this season, and rightly so. Seeing both Louisville and New Mexico, the leader in each conference, go out, that's pretty crazy. It's obviously unfortunate that Charleston beat us, and we're going to get into that game a little bit more, but it definitely could have gone the same way that these ones went. It was a pretty wild weekend, and it's I guess that's just how USL soccer goes, right? It's going to be wacky. It's going to be pretty unpredictable.
That's why we love it, though. That's why we love it. Like, that's why, like, admittedly, I don't watch a ton of other USL games throughout the regular season. I don't really like find the time to watch like random Western Conference games in particular. But this is a time of year where it's really fun to watch random USL games because they're not as random, right? It's the finals, it's the conference finals. And they're on like national TV, which is pretty nice. I mean, isn't the final on CBS?
Like, I think so, yeah.
The final's on your channel 10. That's pretty sweet. Anyway, long winded way of saying very cool stuff going on in USL. It's unfortunate that the Rowdies aren't included. but hey, you know what they say, James. There's not next week right now, but there is next season.
Yes.
And I'm sure the front office and whatnot, I'm sure the whole team is quite motivated. Hopefully we can keep these guys around. But we can save those reflections for a little bit from now. Let's talk about this game a bit here, James. Before we do that, always have to mention a quick shameless plug for the RBLR Sports shop. I want to mention that liking and subscribing is free, and you absolutely should. Please do that if you like James and I at all. But if you need some new threads, you can support this podcast by heading over to shop.rblrsports.com. James is emphatically pointing at it below and checking out all the designs that have been cooked up in that link. Again, link's in the description. The link is on the stream, the live stream, the video if you're watching. If you're listening, again, link in the description. Most importantly, if you want some free money back, promo code COYR for 10% off. Again, promo code COYR for 10% off. James, what does that mean, Coyer? You know, it took me like the first couple months of my Rowdies fandom to be like, what does Coyer mean? Like, why does everybody keep writing Coyer everywhere? What is that? COYR, 10% off. James, okay. Let's talk about this game. We should at least a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Let's debrief. Let's decompress. To use a word Eureka used earlier. Let's take a moment to be cathartic and just process this game. Because there was a lot to talk about. It was an exciting one. It was one that kind of kept you on the edge of your seat. A great game to watch as a neutral. Again, like most of these USL games were this weekend. A lot to keep an eye on. Just so many things to talk about. I'm looking at the notes that we have here. You jotted down a couple things between Cal's big miss, a potential missed red on Chapman, which I think was a pretty big miss, to put it lightly, but some injuries maybe. Where do we want to start with this one, James?
Well, yeah, obviously there are a lot of things to hit on, and doing them in sequential order would work, but not, you gotta tell like the whole story first, and then you gotta hit on pieces. So we've already mentioned, of course, that it was a 2-1 loss, and we've already mentioned at this point that it was a comeback win for Charleston. However, where this game started, I would say, was actually pretty good for the Rowdies. I think that even though, so we had Jordan Doherty on last week to help us preview the game, and I think that he gave us, which is not to say that he was lying, but I think that he gave us an incorrect view of how the game would ultimately be played by the Rowdies. He said that the Rowdies were going to, the best defense is a good offense, is I think the way that he put it, something along those lines. Ultimately, the Rowdies were actually a lot more defensive in this game. They were sitting back a lot more, and that's understandable because as much as Lou City was the best team on points over the course of the season, I think Charleston far and away has the best attack. And I mean, a lot of that does come down to one person, but there are two or three players around him that really are not at the same level, but are pretty close actually. And I think that they have a very, very potent lineup of midfielders right behind the striker, which has not been the striker that they were using over the course of most of the season. So you have to think about that too. They were able to chop and change up top and still get a lot of great results over the last 2 months of the season and then through the playoffs as well. So yes, let's get into how the Rowdies actually started to play. And like I said, that was a bit more defensively than probably you and I were expecting. But at the same time, it is completely understandable to try and handle that Charleston battery attack. And the way that you generally try to attack when you are a much more defensive team and you're sitting a lot deeper is to catch a team in transition, put a ball over the top, and try and beat them that way. Ultimately, one of those worked for us, and actually two of them almost worked for us. But yeah, we were able to let Charleston do a lot of the stuff that they wanted to do in front of us while mostly trying to keep them out of our box or keep them from getting good chances within a really good area. It didn't always work out because it's Charleston and they have all of the players that they do, but we were actually doing a pretty good job. I think that the first time I watched this game, I was with the Ralph's Mob group at Studio Pub in St. Pete. And first of all, by the way, good place. I do like that bar. I like their selection, both for beers and food, if you ever want to go and check it out. But I watched that and I took away from it. I didn't take away everything that I needed. So I did the rewatch and I feel a little bit differently now. Not totally differently, but I didn't notice at first just how many chances Charleston ultimately had over the course of this game. And some of those came in the first half, some of those came in the second half. A lot of them came after Cal Jennings' goal. So I'll put that out there. The first big talking point in terms of how the game went sequentially was Danny Crisostomo getting a big head injury. I thought that he was going to have to go off. He didn't, and he wore gauze wrapped around his head after that. So that was interesting. I thought that we were going to see somebody else come on at that point, but he continued. He actually ended up playing the whole game because Lewis Hilton had to come out later on and Danny Crisostomo was the more defensive player. So that was kind of cool that he was able to stay on and play in a different role later on. But yeah, with us trying to play this a bit more of a long ball game, we were able to open up positions in the middle where Cal Jennings and Manuel Arteaga would try to play off of each other. And this happened on both of the big chances that the Rowdies had in the first half. The first one obviously did work out. Ultimately, I think it was a pass up by Jordan Farr that was flicked on and landed at Cal Jennings. Cal Jennings was able to beat Nathan Dos Santos to the ball. And he actually had a pretty poor little defensive play in that specific moment. Cal then found Manuel Arteaga in acres of space, and his finish was picture perfect. Absolutely beautiful.
Fantastic.
That was really good. And the bar where I was at, we went nuts, obviously. But after that, It was something of an onslaught by Charleston. They had, I don't know how many corners they ended this game with. I wonder if I can check that now. But they had a ton of corners within this game, 9. And I think that the vast majority of those came within like the 10 minutes right after Manuel Arteaga's goal up until halftime. It seemed like they had not only multiple corners, but multiple very good chances off of corners. We had two goal line saves, one by Danny Crisostomo, who was wearing the gauze around his head, one by Jordan Doherty. There was another one by Jordan Farr that had just proceeded and led to one of the corner kicks. So you could still see, even while we were doing this more defensive work, you could still see that Charleston had it within them to probably get back into this game. Ultimately, they would. And we were... I won't say hanging on, but there were several moments when it absolutely could have been equalized immediately, and then they could have gone ahead in the first half. They didn't. And unfortunately, we also failed to capitalize on our own chance, which was the second one that I was referring to earlier. The ball came from, I think, Aaron Guillen, somebody a bit deeper, maybe Blake Bodley, and they found Manuel Arteaga in that little bit of space that was in the midfield because we had been sitting so deep. And then he found Cal Jennings on his own with a very quick, a very quick pass. It was perfect. He turned, he took one touch, he turned and he hit it. And it was very, very, very precise for where Cal Jennings wanted to go. And unfortunately, Cal had a lot more time than I think he knew. He could have taken another touch to get a little bit closer to Adam Grinwis or suck him in, suck him out of his goal line, something like that. But unfortunately, he did not realize that he had all that time and space. And he, I don't know if he panicked or what, but the shot was not what it needed. And it did not beat Adam Grinwis, as we all now know. And from there, that was how the first half mostly went. Barring the other chances that Charleston had, a lot of them, again, off of corner kicks.
That pass from Arteaga is, like, mental. Like, he was facing the other – he was facing our own goal.
Yes, yeah.
And, like, the vision you have to be able to see that, like, as it plays out and to put that pass into the perfect space is incredible. And I think Grinwis was, like – if he's a he's a great goalie, he made some great saves, but – I think a slightly better goalie would have been positioned to come out and grab that, not grab it, but like kick it away before Cal has the space. Cause that ball was like quite a bit away ahead of Cal. I like as that played out, I was kind of waiting for the Charleston keeper to like pop up into frame.
I was as well. I remember. Yeah.
And he didn't. And which is, again, you can't be in no man's land, right? So once you realize you can't make it over there, you sit back and just kind of hope for the best. And you know what? Maybe Cal expected that too. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're on, maybe he expected Grinwis to be up in his face much quicker than he was. In fact, he never was in Cal's face. Cal rips a shot essentially as he's like stepping into the goalie box. While the Charleston keeper Grinwis is in the smaller box, like he's on the line,
right?
Six yards. He's on the line of his own 6 yard box. I'm looking back at it right now. I'm looking at the highlight again. And that's I think what kills you, because Grinwis doesn't move from there. Like he stays on that 6 yard line, the entire time. And Cal like takes a step out wide, and I don't really know what was going. I mean, I'm sure it's hard. It's easier like, you know, talk about this from my point of view, right? Like it, I'm sure in the moment it looks like there's much less space than there is, but there really is a lot of space to work with here. Somehow
what we were thinking at the bar is possibly he thought the defender was closer behind him.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, I could see that. Certainly I could see that as well, but I mean, he was gone, man. Like he was gone. That defender was so far behind him. And even if he was there, like, I don't know why he's still drifting out wide that whole time. Like, and there was so much space to adjust. You could have like, and again, you don't want to like take up too much time either, like getting comfortable either. Like if you can get in your own head, once that happens. So I get it, but like, and it was still a great save. Grinwis had to save that with like, you know, this is like his bicep almost. But that, I mean, that has to be 2-0. It just has to be.
It has to. Yeah.
And it, my heart kind of dropped in that moment, because you're not going to get a ton more chances like that in a game like this. And it was, in some sense, like a lapse of judgment from the Charleston back line to not expect that run from Cal Jennings sooner.
And the pass.
Yeah. So that was a mistake on their part as well that led to how much base Cal had, right? And maybe a slight misjudgment from Grinwis to have stayed back there, because that just has to be 2-0. So that was really unfortunate, because I think I'd said this on the last episode that you kind of, to win this one in regular time, like, or to get out of this with like any chance of winning, you needed 2 goals. With a team like Charleston, like they're almost certainly going to score at least 2 goals with the offense they have, right? You needed 2 goals in this one to have a chance, take it into extra time or something. you know, ultimately that was the amount of goals Charleston scored, right? It was two goals. So getting that right before halftime would have been insane. It would have been humongous. So yeah, I think in some sense I didn't like give up already by halftime, and I'm sure the guys didn't either, but I think they all knew that they needed that goal.
Yeah.
And Cal really needed to put that away. So it's very, very unfortunate. I think that was the one thing that we've seen kind of Cal lose a bit of in this kind of like bad stretch of the year, is that like finishing touch, right? I mean, there's been a lot of looks that he's had that he hasn't been able to put away. Chances that like we can call like easy, quote unquote, right? Like the higher XG chances,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Those are the chances that like you need to obviously put away more often than you don't, and by like a significant margin, because they don't come around too often, especially in a game like this. I think between that Detroit game and this game, the struggles of like that last part of the year weren't present, really. Like there wasn't like that really like bad finishing or like shaky midfield and shaky back line. The team had been solid between that Detroit game and this game up until like that moment right at the end of the half, right? That's where I was like, that's where I could see like the leftover of like the bad portion of the year that's still with the team, right? We haven't gotten over some of it, and it's unfortunate, but again, like this is kind of what the team was for a long time during the season. That finishing wasn't really there for a while, and it showed its head again a bit more this time around. And there was a couple looks during the Detroit game too that I think we could have said we should have put away too. Like there was like one like 3-on-1 look, if I'm remembering right, in the Detroit game that would have put us ahead. Maybe one more that I'm forgetting, but this is the one that I think will stick with us throughout the offseason as our kind of like lasting like a lasting image to end the year, right?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. I think it's like somewhat unfair to Cal as well that's going to be like how we remember this like end of the year, like this this game. That's gonna be what sticks with me. But I mean, it is what it is. Like these are the chances that like are just gonna haunt you at the end of the game, and obviously that's they did.
How it goes.
Yeah. So that's a long-winded way of saying it's unfortunate. We needed like a little bit more from Cal at the end of this one, but that's like you said, that's just how it goes sometimes. So again, to be fair, a great save from Grinwis still at the end of this half, but that goal would have been obviously meant to put us up 2-0, but right before half, I think it would have drained some of the morale out of that Charleston team to come back down to like and to concede that right before halftime before you go in the locker room after all the chances you had in that first half. I think we could have seen that team come out with their heads not, you know, with their shoulders not as, you know, up and confident as they would have been, as they were in that second half. So, I don't know. Unfortunate, but like you said, that's how it goes sometimes. Yeah. Second half, James, talk us through this, because this was kind of where, obviously, we ended up losing, right? Charleston knocks in two goals here. They get one in the 50th minute pretty quickly off of that Markanic header, which, by the way, I have no idea how, like, he managed to get up on Guillen, and who was that? I'm trying to see. I'm looking back. Is that Bodily? Yeah. He's not that tall. And like, we have two guys there. Like, that was a frustrating one to let in, I'll admit. But how did you see this goal play out?
Yeah, something that I would say happened a lot in the second half, and I can't say this for certain just because I don't have trackers or anything like the team does, but it seemed as though all of the defensive work that we were doing, where we were continually living on a bit of a knife's edge at times, that kind of caught up to us in the second half. And relatively quickly, obviously, I think that we tired out, especially after that after that goal. I would point to Lewis Hilton getting the injury where he had to go off, although that was in the 68th minute. So that was a good little bit afterwards. But when Lewis Hilton went off, like I said earlier, Danny Chrysostomo was suddenly our most defensive player. And not that he's bad at that, but he's certainly not the most defensive minded player. So I don't think that he is the player that we would prefer to have there. I think that having him and Nate Worth sitting both in front of Lewis Hilton would probably be a better situation. But either way, I am getting a little ahead of myself. Juan Torres was the player who really started to take advantage of the situation where we were playing so deep. So he would kind of receive the ball actually a lot in the second half. He was probably one of the best players in that whole second half, including Nick Markkanich and Aaron Molloy, despite their incredible goals. I think that Juan Torres was the player that was one of the most prominent names that the commentators were using, obviously, because he was just so frequently the person in charge of everything. So he would drop back, receive the ball. And in this case, he did so as well. He was able to work a little bit with the players over on the left side where he would normally be found, including Chris Allen. And Chris Allen was ultimately, he was defended by Leo Fernandez. And this was another thing that was pointed out at the bar, something that I, like, my brain recognized, but I didn't put it together, and somebody else said it. So I apologize, whoever said this, I'm forgetting which it was, but somebody was like, why the hell is Leo Fernandez the one defending him? And again, it's not that Leo Fernandez is not a bad, is a bad defender. He played as a left back up until 3 years ago, the season before he won the MVP. So keep that in mind. But is he the player that we want to have in that situation? Obviously, he's not. And there's some sort of miscommunication whereby Juan Torres, with his just dropping in between people and finding the ball in different places, has everybody going all these different ways. And that includes ultimately Leo Fernandez playing as the right back. That's not what anybody probably prefers. So Chris Allen receives the ball from Juan Torres out on the left side, swings it in. And then this is where I would place the most blame. Maybe not the most, but between Aaron Guillen and Blake Bodley, letting Nick Markkanich get effectively a free header in that situation, that's not acceptable. Everybody knows how good Nick Markkanich is. And he's so good because he can find these pockets of space for himself, but how do we let a player of his quality just get so open like that? It was really disappointing after the team had done so well in the first half to get all of these last ditch efforts to prevent Charleston from scoring. And then we give one up really, really cheaply, in my opinion. I want to really quickly quote from Robbie Nielsen in the post game, and then I'll turn it over to you, Carlos, because I've been talking for a bit here, but these are a couple of things that he pointed out that I would generally agree with alongside everything that I just said. So to quote, "We're obviously disappointed with the outcome and the final result. I thought we didn't really implement the way we wanted to play in the game, but I thought we defended well. We shut off a lot of their options. We got the opening goal and had an opportunity to make it two, but couldn't convert. I thought over the course of the game, we never really created enough to dominate." And to continue that quote, "We knew we were going to have to sit and defend a lot because Charleston are a good attacking team. We wanted to be better in the transition because we know if you can connect in transition when you play, you can go and break them down. But we just weren't secure enough with our first pass a lot of the time. That was probably the downfall for us." So there are a lot of things in there that I think are really interesting. And I don't know if us giving up the second ball as frequently was always our downfall. I definitely think we gave it away a lot more than we needed to in this game. That did hurt us, but the problem that I saw was, at least with this goal especially, Juan Torres started to really put a stamp on this game, and we didn't react well to that. We didn't have people defending the way that we needed to. And ultimately, we were not able to implement our game plan. We weren't able to impose ourselves on this game. And that I would totally agree with Robbie Nielsen on, which doesn't mean anything because he's so much smarter at soccer than I am. But I will just say it anyway. So, Carlos, what did you think?
Just about the rest of the half, about that goal. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking back again at the highlights to relive the pain. my second half takeaways are still that Jordan Farr had an insane game. He was still like, wow. Like, I'm looking back at the header again. It's like, there's nothing he can do in that situation.
No, he was not, like, to blame for that either.
And then the free kick, even less so. in the second half, there was less opportunities like that Charleston had that made push him in a situation where he has to make these insane, crazy saves like he did in the first half, because there was a couple that were just wild in that first half. But I mean, in the second half, I think one of my takeaways here is that we just didn't create a ton in the second half. Like, yeah. Like we obviously talked about how, you know, Charleston imposed themselves on us much more than we did on them throughout the game. I think that showed its head much more in the second half, just because we didn't really have anything going for us. In the first half, we obviously had that goal, which helps kind of skew the perception of like how much we created.
Right.
But this Charleston team was putting pressure, free kicks. They get like open looks. They had a one-on-one look that Blake Bodley essentially had to come into the rescue and out of nowhere. And at least put on pressure. I don't even know if he got a touch on the ball, but Juan Torres pushed it slightly wide of Jordan Farr into the post. I honestly can't tell if Blake Bodley or Juan Torres got the last touch on it. No, Juan Torres got the touch on it, but Blake Bodley got there to at least make him uncomfortable, because he had so much space if it wasn't for Blake Bodley sprinting in at the perfect time. Juan Torres would have easily had a goal. Without that Blake Bodley pressure, if he didn't feel that pressure, he's setting it up and putting that away. He has the capacity for that 99 times out of 100. Mm-hmm. I think we still got very lucky, because I think that still goes in 80 times out of 100. I don't know.
Yeah.
80% of the time that goes in. It hit the post, evidently, so we didn't have to worry about that. Ultimately, again, Charleston gets that silly free kick. It's a wonder goal. They go crazy. Jordan Farr is looking up in shock and kind of just disbelief, which was different from his reaction to the first goal, which was slamming his fist into his thighs over and over again because he was so pissed off. That second goal, he just looked – he accepted it. What are you going to do with that one? I mean, truly. Again, nothing else really going for us in this one. We had one look at the end of the game, Arteaga. Like, couldn't do anything with it. The ball fell right to him in the kind of jumble of a chance.
Yeah.
But there's
lots of legs in the way.
Exactly. So many Charleston players back that there's really no way for that ball to get through. Because they were just standing in front of it. Like, nothing else. Not particularly skillful or anything. It's just putting bodies there and making sure there's no space for the ball to go through. And they did that well. And that was it. I mean, honestly, Charleston didn't create a ton either, like, later in this game. It really was a wonder goal and then a bit of a flurry early on in the half. But we didn't get anything in the second half. First half had, obviously, the goal, right, and the Cal Jennings miss, which, again, will be seared into my memory for a while, unfortunately. But, obviously, like, we had something going in that first half, something in the attack. Charleston, I think, still had significantly more. And I think they had more than they did in the second half, ironically, despite the second half being where they got the goals. I think most of their best opportunities were in that first half, which is crazy because they hit the post in the second half. But I digress. That's it. That's kind of the summary of the game. Charleston deservedly won, to be fair. Like, I think I've kind of implying that like the Rowdies deserve to win this one still, like with all their chances and everything. Like Charleston certainly deserves to win. Like they had more chances and everything. They had like what would equate to like three or four of our Cal Jennings miss. You know what I mean? Like they had three times what, you know, Cal Jennings had in that last miss. We were getting really lucky. We were making some crazy goal line saves and Jordan Farr was standing on his head for a little bit. 2-1, despite it being a silly header and a wonder goal that pushed them over the line, like they probably should have had more. So I think it was on us to go out and score more goals, obviously. I mean, that's how you win games, obviously. But the back line didn't do anything particularly terrible. Again, the silly header from Arcanic, we can talk about that one for a little bit, I'm sure. But Charleston's going to score at least two goals on you every time. They're a very good soccer team.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
This Charleston roster. So you need to go out and be able to match that. And we just weren't able to. We didn't have the offensive productivity. And that's what it came down to at the end, I think. So I think that's where I can leave my thoughts on this game, James, because that's kind of the summary of it. We have so much time over the next several months to kind of debrief on the year. Think about where we're going to be in a few months. Think about who might be coming back. We already know one name that's not coming back. We've said it multiple times. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've probably seen it on Twitter and stuff already. But there'll be some turnover, I'm sure. It's lower division soccer. I think we've been really lucky with how much we've been able to keep like a core together. Mm-hmm. And every year I'm always like, well, this is it. There they go. They're going to go off now. And there goes the core. It could be this year. It could be. You know, some of the guys are getting a bit older too, right? Like, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, as every year, I think this is the year when it's a massive roster turnaround. It's a totally new team. And it hasn't been yet over the last several years. It could be this year, but I mean, there's only one way to find out. We'll break it down going forward. But James, you have anything else to say about this game, or can we wrap it up with our man of the match?
I think we should go to our man of the match.
Okay. Our last man of the match of the year, James, so sad.
That's right.
My man of the match to close out the year. I'm going to go with the easy one, Manu Arteaga, for scoring that incredible finish that gave us a chance in this one. I was going crazy. I thought we really had it in the bag, to be honest, when we opened the scoring. There's a lot of momentum going for us when he put that first goal away. Highly, highly unfortunate that ultimately didn't pan out. But I think Jordan Farr deserves more than a shout out from this as well. He could be like my co-man of the match if we're doing that. I don't know. But if he's not, he's like right below. He had a great game despite letting up two goals. Again, neither of those were his fault. I think he was done pretty dirty by like the FOTMob rating. He made eight saves according to FOTMob, which is a great game all around. But the quality of some of these saves were incredible. Some were one hand goal line.
Yeah, they were. Like, they were.
It was wild. So he had a fantastic, fantastic game himself. James, who's your man of the match?
My man of the match is Danny Crisostomo. I went with him for multiple reasons. For one thing, he took the head injury and kept playing and ultimately played the whole 90 minutes in this game, which is what I have mentioned a couple times now. Additionally, when Lewis Hilton had to go off due to a leg injury, that's something you obviously can't play, which is not to say that you can play through a head injury, but if you pass the concussion protocol, of course, you can continue playing. So Crisostomo did that. And when Hilton went off, Crisostomo stepped into the more defensive role in the central midfield and was sitting behind Nate Wirth. Now, this is not to say that Nate Wirth is not a good player, but as a very young and inexperienced player, he's probably not been thrust into many positions quite as taxing as that, and quite as with that much responsibility on his shoulders there. So for Danny Crisostomo to be the person behind him, to be the person kind of helping to lift him, I think that that's really helpful. And I do want to, since he did play a little bit in the defensive role, I just wanted to highlight a couple of his stats. Tackles one out of one. Pretty good 100% there. But the other ones were cleared off the line one. Again, that was that header off of one of the corners when his head was already bandaged. Blocks two, interceptions one, dribbled past one time, but also four recoveries. So I think that with all of that being said, Danny Crisostomo played very well considering all the circumstances that he had to go through in this particular game. And that is why I gave it to him. So Carlos, I think that we have now covered the entirety of this Charleston game.
Yeah. There's the end of the year. That's it. No more Rowdy games to talk about until, hypothetically preseason, late January, maybe at earliest. It always kind of jumps around, doesn't it?
They kind of, let's start hope that we get something against, Inter Miami or one of those other teams that
this is BS. I don't want to get into that again, James. That was it's too soon. I'm still riled up about that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if you think about it, next month's December and after that's January. So we've seen preseason start as early as really late January. So, hey, it's not too far away either. I'm sure the offseason news is going to start rolling in. We'll have players to talk about sooner rather than later. Hopefully some great names. We'll get into wish lists and stuff this offseason. That's always a fun time. I really enjoyed doing that last season, talking about some players that we should really look out for. There's a few in my mind already, a few guys that I know might be free agents coming up, and I'll save them for next couple episodes going into the offseason. So lots to talk about. There's going to be a lot to talk about. I'm really excited. I'm already looking forward to next season. I really am. Like, preseason is always a really fun time because you kind of get to, you know, well, this season there was a lot of closed door games, but in theory, you get to see the team kind of find its identity in the early parts of the year. So let's hope for an early preseason, February at the latest. Maybe we got a couple games in there. Who knows? Going to extra time, James, we already know one player who won't be returning to the Rowdies next year. He'll be joining a now elite core of DC Rowdies, including myself and Connor Antley. Jordan Farr will be joining DC United, as was reported by Post Sports, the Washington Post. Jordan Farr, 7-year veteran of the U.S. Second Division, is what they called him. Signed with DC United after they declined options on all four of their goalkeepers at the end of the 2024 season. So I don't know, bit of DC United is a very interesting club in the way it's operated for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
This is kind of on par for how they tend to operate in the off season. To my knowledge, Connor Antley is still a DC United player. There hasn't been anything to indicate that he's not. But there hasn't really been any news about him or off-season news from the DC United front. Jordan Farr joins a team that had the Golden Boot winner in MLS last year in Christian Benteke. So a team with a lot of promise, though. DC United's kind of built a little bit of something, a little bit of excitement for that team. They're going to need to rely on more than just their old Christian Benteke striker going forward, but it's a team with some promise, and hopefully Jordan Farr can be a part of that. Again, I know there was a lot of, you know, he got some flack this year for some silly mistakes that happened more often than we'd like this season, but he closed the year better than you know, any playoff performances I can remember from a keeper, with the exception of like maybe the Breno penalty save in Memphis, right?
Yes, yeah, right.
It's about as good a close to a playoff run, two games, as I can remember for a Rowdy's keeper. So he's an incredible goalie. He's so talented. I think he just had a down year, just like the rest of this team, right? There's so many talented players on this team that are indisputably fantastic players who statistically had bad seasons or like mediocre seasons this year.
Yeah.
It's everybody had a down season. It was the team as a whole. They will bounce back collectively, individually as players. Jordan Farr will certainly be one of them. And I'm hoping this isn't something where he rides the bench like, like an Evan Lauro in FC Cincinnati or something, right? Hopefully he can get the minutes he deserves because he is a fantastic goalkeeper. Thank you, Jordan Farr, for a great season. Still, I mean, we had a good run, and you closed out the year well. So all the best for him going forward.
Early wish list, Evan Lauro, who might be available, who could say?
I'm sure the guy's really good, and I'm sure he's super bored sitting on the bench in Cincinnati.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure he is. Like, I know he played like what, Open Cup maybe. He deserves playing time. And look, I think he has unfinished business with the Rowdies still. I think he does. So
just putting that out there.
Throw it out the early wish list, yeah.
Exactly. Moving on to the next point, the USL League One final is this Sunday. Tune in to see who comes out on top. It will be very interesting. I believe it is between Spokane and I had it in front of me. I had it at the top of my brain, and now I've lost it. But
Omaha.
There we go. Thank you. Spokane and Omaha. Yeah, they must not have conferences there, because there's no way that Omaha and Spokane would be in different in the same or different ones. Yeah.
They don't have conferences.
Yeah. No. So Spokane and Omaha will be the two teams to contest it. Please tune in and support USL, just like Carlos said, with your viewership. But also, I think it could be a good game, and maybe there are some players who could end up helping out at the USL championship level. Who knows? Yeah.
It's number one versus number seven, by the way. Spokane made a run to the final. Basically playing all of their games. They played all their games away up until now, and this one will be no different. So, we had some Road Warriors win it last year in the USL Championship in Phoenix Rising. Maybe we could see a bit of a trend developing here. We'll be a Road Warrior champion every year. So keep an eye on Spokane. They have a fun stadium, by the way. their home stadium is pretty fun little stadium, but Omaha.
Yeah, brand new.
Certainly. Yeah, Omaha's a good team too, though. From the little bit I know about USL League One, this could be a good one. So tune in November 17th. Should be fun.
Absolutely. And the U.S. men's national team have games coming up this weekend. Watch out for those on Thursday and Monday. They are actually competitive. They are against Jamaica, and they are part of the Nations League, I think, quarterfinals. Yeah, quarterfinals before the semifinals next year and the finals, I believe, in March. So something like that. Either way, these are Poch's first competitive games. Pretty cool. I think that that's something to keep an eye on. And the other thing that I wanted to say before we get to some kind of sad news is just to say that there is another potential hurricane. Like I said, watch out on the news for that, because we might not have to worry about any Rowdies games getting postponed at this point, but you do need to be prepared.
The weather machine, the Charleston Battery weather machine.
That's right.
Don't, guys, open your eyes. The evidence is right in front of us. But to close out the episode with some sad news. It's really unfortunate, James. This came out earlier today on like the American news cycle on American soccer last night in Ecuador. Yeah. Marco Angulo, 22 years old, guys my age, like it's just super sobering, passed away last night in Quito. This was now about a month after the car accident he got to in Quito. There's four people in the car. One of them, even younger kid, Independiente del Valle player, passed away at the site of the accident. Marco Angulo has been in the hospital the entire month. And unfortunately, it looks like he succumbed to his injuries last night. So super unfortunate. And I think it's worth shouting him out because he was a player who like really had so much potential in the central midfield. Like, and by all accounts and by everything, like anybody's ever interacted with him, just like super jovial personality. Connection to American soccer is that he played for FC Cincinnati recently. He was on loan actually to Liga de Quito, so obviously like the team I follow in Ecuador, which was a great signing for us. He was a fantastic player. He got minutes sometimes off the bench, sometimes as a starter. He was a great player in the central midfield. He came from that incredible academy, the Independiente del Valle Academy, that's just been producing so many great players.
Yeah.
So he was in the list of players that had a lot of potential, even, you know, later on, quote unquote, in his like youth stage as a 22-year-old, people still gave him the opportunity to potentially be a really big name central midfielder going forward. And obviously Cincinnati knew that. Obviously, that's why they signed him. They wanted to give him some more minutes in Ecuador before, you know, they take more of a chance on him. He was on loan down there and, super, super sobering, super sad. Don't take anything for granted because it's incredible what can happen in the blink of an eye. So incredible player, incredible player. I know the whole like Liga de Quito fan base and all of Ecuador is pretty, much in mourning today because again, super sobering news. Hoping that Liga can, close out the year really well in his honor. So. That'd be a really nice tribute to him, win a title for him. So we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. It is terrible whenever this happens to, it obviously is terrible whenever it happens, but this is somebody who is in the spotlight. So obviously we have a little bit more background on who this was. And yeah, that is very, very sad for him and his family and Ecuadorian people everywhere who know of Marco Angulo.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Great guy, man. Yeah.
Rest in peace, of course. So with that sobering piece of information, we will actually close the night out. There are things that matter more than just winning and losing in playoff games or what have you. And obviously that's one of them. But yeah, I guess a little bit of a weird episode overall. Either way, thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We appreciate when you do that, even if we end up on a sober point. You can follow us for all of our points, whether they be sober or jovial, or whenever we get to it, the polls for what we need to do for our own prediction standings.
Sure.
You can find all of that on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, anywhere at RBLR Sports. If you'd like to get at me, I am mostly on Twitter at RBLR James K, or you can use the hashtag AskRBLR. Carlos, what about you?
I am on Twitter at CarlosCPA10. There's Rowdies are over for a little bit, but hey, like there's plenty of stuff going on in the world of sports, in the world of soccer. Tampa Bay Sun is a really great team to really get into, especially if you're a Rowdies fan that kind of hasn't had a chance to really like lock in on the Sun, get to know the players, get to know the dynamics, go check out a game and everything, because there's been a lot of overlap with the Rowdies. Now would be a good time to do that, obviously. I think that it's great that the calendars are like that. So it's a really good time to really lock in on the Sun now as the season comes to a close. If you haven't had a chance, honestly, admittedly, I am one of those people. I haven't had a chance to really get to know the players or the dynamics of the team, really how the team's doing in general. This will be a really good time for me to start locking in on the Sun, watching some great Sun games. It's kind of funny. Like I turn off, you know, the TV for a while, the day the Rowdies lost, and I'm like, oh, the Sun aren't playing. Let's go check it out now. I turn it on, watch the last few minutes. Immediately, they can see the equalizer when I turn on the TV, like 5 minutes later. So bad day for Tampa soccer in general, Tampa Bay soccer that weekend. But going forward, it's a really talented team. And the stadium looks like a great time. So I really want to go check it out. I hope they have a game when I'm back home over the next couple months. So I'll be there if I'm there, and you should absolutely follow this team. So much soccer going on outside of the Sun, but again, what better way to catch up with the Sun than with the RBLR Sun FC podcast coming out tomorrow, by the way, if you're listening to this live. So check it out. Super fun. Good team. And at Carlos TPA Ton on Twitter. Georgetown basketball is back too. I'll be talking a lot about basketball. So let's go.
There we go. Like and subscribe to all of our podcasts. You can do that in whatever podcast app you use, or you can get the full experience on YouTube. We are also on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Again, wherever you get those. So please join us, all of these forums that you use. We'll see you in the near future to do our full postseason recap, talk about all sorts of other soccer things, hopefully get some former players on.
Yep.
I'm on you, Rowdies.
Let's sign Messi. Everybody's doing it.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.